You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Last week, I reminded you that there are conflicting opinions in the Bible. Far from having one unifying thread of perfect wisdom hidden in its pages, the Bible was intentionally assembled, yes, by committees, with dissenting opinions throughout. Whole books were included with the sole purpose of resisting the message prevalent in other books. Ruth and Jonah are two of those books. Jonah is not just about some poor sot getting belched out on the beach. Jonah offers a clear message to Jews who would selfishly claim that you have to be Jewish for God to love you, and that God's favor extends to all people, even those horrible Assyrians. Ruth is all about shaming racists and xenophobes into welcoming the immigrant and refugee into our midst. So, we introduced James as one of those alternative voices. In James' case, opposing Paul. Mind you, there's a ton of resistance literature against Paul in the New Testament. For every one of the authentic letters of Paul, there's at least one other letter written to try to dial back how radical the original Paul was. James is an example of a letter designed not so much to undo Paul, like Ephesians or Timothy or Colossians, but to clarify one of his primary messages. Paul promoted grace to the point that some folks thought that faith alone was enough. Just believe. And in the middle of our text this morning is a line you may have heard before. Be doers of the word and not hearers only. Mind you, Paul never said, just believe. But some of his followers evidently took it that way. So the theme of the letter of James is, do something with your faith. Transform the world. Don't just sit there. And while it emphasizes a practical expression of Christianity for early Jesus followers, it's also deeply and profoundly Jewish.
Our words of wisdom are from James chapter 2, verses 14 through 18, and James chapter 1, verses 22 through 25, and verse 27. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if you say you have faith but do not have works? Can faith save you? If a brother or sister is naked and lacks daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm, and eat your fill, and yet you do not supply their bodily needs, what is the good of that?
So faith by itself, if it has no works, is dead. Someone will say, you have faith, and I have works. Show me your faith apart from your works, and I, by my works, will show you my faith.
But be doers of the word, and not merely hearers who deceive themselves. For if any are hearers of the word and not doers, they are like those who look at themselves in a mirror. For they look at themselves and on going away immediately forget what they were like.
But those who look into the perfect law, the law of liberty, and persevere, not hearers, forget, but doers who act, they will be blessed in their doing. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God, the Father, is this, to care for orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself unstained by the world.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
On July 2nd, 1982, Larry Walters, a 33-year-old truck driver from California, took the 45 weather balloons he'd bought at the local army surplus store, and filled them with helium. He strapped himself into a lawn chair, to which several friends then tied the balloons, And he took along all the essentials, sandwiches, beer, a camera, a CB radio, and a parachute. He also took a BB gun, figuring he could shoot the balloons one at a time when he was ready to land. Suffice it to say, Walters was caught off guard when the chair shot to an altitude of over 16,000 feet. That's about 3 miles high. Smack into the middle of the air traffic approach pattern of Long Beach Municipal Airport. As fighter jets were scrambled, a TWA pilot on approach confirmed a guy in a lawn chair with a gun. Larry stayed airborne for about 45 minutes when he finally managed to shoot enough balloons to start to descend. After getting tangled in power lines and causing a power outage in Long Beach, he managed to climb down safely where he was sighted by the police. Reporters asked him 3 questions. Were you scared? Yes. Would you do it again? No. Why did you do it? Because, he said, you can't just sit there. You can't just sit there. And yet, one of the defining characteristics of many Christians is having been convinced by years of indoctrination that all they have to do is believe. Just say the Jesus prayer and you're all set. Why? Because for a lot of folks, being a Christian is more about cosmic fire insurance than being inspired to transform the world. For James, it's all fine and good to be saved by faith, or however you want to put it. But if you claim to have faith and don't love your neighbor, your faith is dead. James brings it home emphatically. If a brother or sister is ill-clad and in lack of daily food, and one of you says to them, "Go in peace and be warmed and filled," that is, you give them some pious platitude, without giving them the things needed for the body, what good is it? And what good are you? Then at the end of the passage today, he offers a clear definition. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this: to care for orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself unstained by the world. Let's look at that more closely. What is the purest expression of religion? To care for orphans and widows in their distress. Can it be any clearer? Now, does James literally mean orphans and widows? Maybe. But if you look through the whole Bible, orphans, widows, and refugees were used as shorthand to talk about all of those who were, as Jesus said, the least of these, those with no power, influence, or voice in our community. So, what is our big bad bit of banned Bible wisdom for today? That expectation that many Christians would rather ignore in favor of just believing real hard? It is to know that the purest expression of religion is to be aware of the existence of, to listen to, and respond with compassion to the needs of those in our culture with no power, influence, or voice. These are core values of both Christianity and Judaism. I'm reminded of the rabbi who took the opportunity to reiterate those values in a pointed Rosh Hashanah sermon back in 2018. You might remember it having caused a bit of a stir. Rabbi Neil Comus Daniels was the childhood rabbi of then White House advisor Stephen Miller. And to put it mildly, the rabbi was mortified by many of the policies of which Miller had been the primary author, including the infamous Muslim ban and the cold-hearted zero-tolerance policy that separated refugee children from their parents at the border. The rabbi starts the sermon out, "Dear Stephen, I was once your rabbi. When you were about 9 or 10 years old, your family belonged to Beth Shir Shalom in Santa Monica. You attended our religious school. The actions that you now encourage make it obvious to me that you didn't get our Jewish message." He goes on to say, "Honestly, Mr. Miller, you've set back the Jewish contribution to making the world spiritually whole through your arbitrary division of these desperate families at our southern border. It's not that we can't reverse what you've done. We can, we are, and we will, along with our sisters and brothers who are Muslim, Christian, Hindu, Sikh, Buddhist, Unitarian, Jain, Native peoples, and many more. We are a coalition of the divinely mandated. We answer to a moral and ethical code that comes from the core of the universe and has many colorful and intricate manifestations. All of them speak one ultimate message of love, cooperation, understanding, and rescue. However, your actions perpetrate a kind of negativity, violence, malice, and brutality that betrays your Judaism and all these spiritualities." Wow. As James says, if the purest expression of religion is caring for the least of these, then there are a lot of fearful, prejudiced Americans who, like Miller, have completely lost the plot, all the while claiming to be people of faith. And for many Christians, grace can become an end in itself. They completely miss the part about how once you're dialed into grace, being a follower of Jesus is about doing what Jesus taught us to do, which in the final analysis includes the very Jewish values of loving kindness and doing justice. Look, what passes for Christianity in the world today is really two different and diametrically opposed religions. One encourages people to ask, "What can God do for me? Save me, give me victory, make me prosperous and successful?" Or it encourages people to ask, "What can I do for God? Using my gifts to serve the less fortunate and change the world for the better." Some people are satisfied with making it all about the hyper self-centered question, "Am I saved? Am I saved?" which I pointed out last week is a pretty neurotic question. But the Jesus-y question, the question James would ask of us is, are you actively engaged in serving the poor in your midst? Are you actively feeding the hungry? Are you working to be reconciled with those from whom you are alienated? Are you working for peace in a war-crazed world? Are you seeking justice for the oppressed? Are you committed to the needs of the real people in front of you? Or are you propping up obsolete and harmful dogmas? That's what James would ask. That's what James is interested in, being doers of the word and not hearers only. And guess what? It's not easy. For many people, being a Christian is about being an upstanding and respectable member of the community. This is a group of teenage girls screaming obscenities at black students entering their high school in Montgomery, Alabama, back in the 1960s. I'm willing to bet that every one of these young women was an upstanding and respectable Christian and convinced that their whiteness made them somehow superior, never mind that the black students they were yelling at were also Christian. One of the great unaddressed cancers eating away at what passes for Christianity today is the notion that following Jesus is about being rewarded for being pure, about being respectable and upstanding, and the insidious indoctrination of privilege. Let me say what I know Jesus would say if he were here today. It's not about being upstanding. It's more about standing up and standing up for the least of these. Few stories embody the transition from being upstanding to standing up than the life of one of my heroes, Bishop Oscar Romero. The powers that be elevated him to Bishop of El Salvador because he was a quiet, respectable bookworm that the American-backed oligarchs thought they could control. He won't make any trouble, they thought. However, when Romero began to see the plight of the poor of El Salvador, he spoke up. He began to call out the very people who had advocated his appointment as the very source of the problem. The establishment wouldn't stand for it, so they had him executed by assassination. But lo and behold, back in 2018, Pope Francis canonized Bishop Romero as a saint. Why? Because he stood up for the poor and the oppressed, even at the cost of his life. When he saw the way people were being treated, he couldn't help but live out what James said was the purest expression of religion. He was a doer and not a hearer only. Look, right now, the Texas legislature is passing legislation that will require every classroom in every Texas public school to prominently display a copy of the Ten Commandments. Besides flying in the face of the separation of church and state, this is just another example of the most superficial of evangelical Christian pandering. It's like that ridiculous bumper sticker, "Honk if you love Jesus." Fine, but anybody can honk. If James was in the Texas legislature, he would be advocating for posters that said, "If you love Jesus, prove it. Have compassion for the hurting. Speak out for the oppressed." For James, compassion for the weakest and most vulnerable members of society should be the focus of any Christian worth their salt, not performative shows of superficial piety. Do you remember Millard Fuller? He was the founder of Habitat for Humanity. It's a pretty mainstream organization today, and the Fountains has been involved in several habitat builds over the years. But when it got started back in 1942, this profoundly Christian effort was accused of all kinds of radical, un-American activities. What were people to think? Blacks and whites living together, sharing their resources in common in rural Georgia. But Fuller was not deterred. He was a doer. At the heart of his theology of the hammer were the convictions of overcoming economic injustice and bringing an end to racism and an attitude that would make James proud. Fuller said, "I see life as both a gift and a responsibility. My responsibility is to use what God has given me to help people in need." And if Millard Fuller is too highfalutin for you, how about the wisdom of our lawn chair pilot, Larry Walters? You can't just sit there. Incidentally, this is Larry's chair on display at the Smithsonian's Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C. Not all of us can be Oscar Romero's, Millard Fuller's, Larry Walters, but all of us have influence in unique ways in the world. All of us can open our hearts to what the Spirit is calling us to do as individuals and as a faith community. We can be proud of the wonderful outpouring of generosity when this or that need arises, but there's something each of us is gifted and called to do. And not be hearers only, if only we let ourselves be open to the Spirit's guidance. Over the years, many of the Fountain's most effective and impactful outreach efforts have been spearheaded by doers, individuals who felt or seen a need and acted on it. Be it our blessing bags for the homeless, the SAWS ministry, Family Promise, Stephen Ministry, Sierra Service Project, and the list goes on and on. I am so proud that the Fountains fosters a culture that encourages doers. And we're not done. If you've got an outreach or project that you feel called to pursue, let's talk and see how the Fountains can help you make it happen. If you've never heard of the Dunkards, they were a sect of religious Germans who immigrated to Pennsylvania in the 18th century. One day, a man confronted one of these pious Christians and asked him, "Are you saved?" And the Dunkard proceeded to take out a piece of paper and a pencil and began writing. Then he handed it to the man and said, "Here are the names and addresses of my family, my neighbors, and the people I do business with. Ask them if they think I'm saved. I could tell you anything." James says, doers is as doers does. So here's to the doers. May we each be one. Be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.